Thank you. Well, I have some glasses, but they're not mine. I actually thought I was asked to speak about human trafficking, not the releasing the captives. So that's what I'm going to talk about. But of course, I will bring some positive things in. But my presentation is really called "Lives for Sale" or "Human Trafficking: The Blight of Europe." Sadly, not the hope of Europe. But we hope that hope will come out of it. And yes, I think we need some lights off. I have a PowerPoint here which just has its own life. We may coincide. I may say what it's saying or I may not, but that's immaterial. And it will... Oh, no, I'm not going to be able to see. Got a torch. I think it's okay. And so I'm going to sort of give an overview of human trafficking, and then I really want to focus on things that we can do to make a change. So today, every minute, one person is trafficked across an international or national border somewhere in the world for exploitative labour or some kind of human slavery, sexual slavery, all kinds of exploitative labour. And every day, 16,000 women and children around the world are sold into prostitution or forced into sexual slavery. Sold for profit for the traffickers, for the mafia, and for huge international criminal syndicates. And so I want to ask us to think about who are these people, because I really want to put a face on human trafficking, because we hear so many statistics, we hear so many... so much information, it can be information overload, really. And I must tell you that none of our statistics agree, because who knows? When I was in Thailand, there was a man who wrote a thesis called Guessing the Unguessable. And that's really how it is with statistics to do with human trafficking. You know, how do you count them? How do you know? But anyway, I want us to focus on that these are people not out there, you know, that are not our concern, that we have nothing to do with, they're not part of my life, but they are, they're people in here. You know, we've heard the phrase several times, don't look away. Well, my phrase is, look beneath the surface, because many of us in our everyday life somehow could be in contact with some of these people. A young woman may answer an advertisement in Bulgaria or Romania or somewhere in the world for a job in Germany or somewhere else in Western Europe or the United States or the United Kingdom or Australia, even New Zealand, I'm sad to say. Often, particularly in Europe, as a waitress or a model or a nanny, and she arrives there, the person meets her, takes her passport, takes her paper, and she's forced into the brothel or onto the streets. Domestic workers may be forced to give sexual services as well as cleaning the house. Massage parlours, and there are plenty of them around these days, especially Thai ones in Europe, may well be fronts for prostitution. And thousands of Vietnamese women who are employed as manicurists are also victims of human trafficking. Not perhaps in the sexual sense, but they're grossly underpaid, they work horrendous hours and very often live in slave-like conditions. A 5-year-old Thai girl might be sold to Denmark to make pornographic movies. An 8-year-old boy can be abducted from Pakistan or Bangladesh and forced to work as a camel jockey in Dubai. I've seen them. Asian men are forced into bonded construction work in many of the Arabian countries and also in Israel, where I read at one time they're forced to live in what used to be chicken coops. This is the workers' accommodation. And something that's happening now is that young women from Lithuania, it's either Lithuania or Latvia, you may know, Jennifer, are being abducted and sold as brides for Pakistanis in the Irish Republic. Why? So that these men can get EU citizenship by having a bride from a new European Union country. Or it may be a Chinese girl like Ying Li, 16 years old, who I met in the bar of a classy nightclub in a top hotel in Bahrain last year. Don't ask me what I was doing there. In Bahrain, all prostitution is in hotels, even in the top hotels like the Hilton, where I was. And I started asking her some questions. She could speak a little bit of English. She had been brought 2 days before with 20 others, who I saw all around the bar, from a little village in China, and they were there to work as hostesses in the bar, which, of course, meant prostitution. And, of course, we all know about the coffee plantations and the cocoa plantations in West Africa. Well, it may be somebody like Kitty, one of my friends on the streets in Berlin, who comes from Budapest. A very vivacious young woman and happy to try to communicate with us. We, when we go on the street, can't speak many of the languages that many of the women we meet speak. But we do a lot with hands and hugs and all the rest of it. And but we've seen Kitty change horrendously over the last 12 months, you know, from this bright, vivacious 21, I think she is, to somebody who's always trying to hide her tears, who's very depressed, who started drinking heavily, who's starting to use drugs because of what she is forced to do. She's not there by choice, but she's been brought by a gang from Hungary, and she is forced by a woman only 2 or 3 years older than herself to work on the street. This other woman, who is also a friend of ours, is the one who organises the women. So human trafficking is not new. In the book of Genesis, we read the story of Joseph, a young man, one of my Bible favourites, who, you know, is left for dead by his brothers and then sold to some travellers, traders, who took him across an international border and sold him into slavery. But the word trafficking is fairly new. You know, when I was a little girl, my mother used to say, don't ever talk to strange men, you might get caught up in the white slave trade. I thought, white slave trade? You know, I knew about Africans taken to America, but never heard of the white slave trade. But so it was not until 1988, my first year in Thailand, that I really knew what it was. When one of my friends, my first real friend, who was a bar girl or prostitute, who was sold by her parents to a broker who took her to Japan. They were a very poor rural family. Everything they owned, their house, their land, their buffalo, was mortgaged up to the bank. And she was the only way that they could really, you know, to make money to provide for the family. And she was working as a go-go dancer in a bar in the area where I was working at that time with Rahab Ministries. And so she went off to Japan. She was illiterate. Once or twice she called me on the phone, and they were constantly being moved. There were four of them from house to house with a mama son or a, you know, an owner, sort of to keep away from the police. And I never heard from her again. And at that time, there was something like 100,000 Thai women who were trafficked into the sex industry in Japan, and many died. And when I first came to Europe, Germany, that's the reason I came, was known as a sex market for Thai women in Europe. And so human trafficking is the illegal trade in human beings by the means of threat or use of force or other forms of coercion, such as abduction, sale, deception, the abuse of power, or giving and receiving payments to move people across international and national borders for the purpose of bonded slave labour or sexual exploitation. And human trafficking is, I think, the extreme form of injustice and a total violation of human rights, because the person has absolutely no rights, often, about any part of their life. They have no opportunity to make any kind of choices or decisions. And so human trafficking takes place for the sale of organs, exploitative bonded labour and domestic servitude, begging and warfare. Think of the child soldiers in Uganda, child soldiers in Burma, and I think in some of the former Eastern Bloc countries there have been many child soldiers. We saw an old lady on the street the other night, very old lady, sort of, you know, face down on the street. Is it the walking street, the shopping street? Begging. And I thought, I wonder, is she Hungarian? Or has she been brought from some other country here as part of a begging gang, another form of human trafficking, where the women, the people are forced to stay on the street, you know, from dawn till dusk, really, but they don't really get much of the results. Or, of course, sexual exploitation and forced prostitution. So the International Labour Organization states that at least 1.39 million people are trafficked to the commercial sex, either transnationally or within countries every year. 56% of all these people are women and girls. Women eager for a better future are susceptible to offers of jobs. Pardon? Is that better? But, you know, as I said before, who knows how many that there really are. The UN says a figure of 2,500 people have become victims of trafficking every year. And they say that 80% are women and children, 70% who are trafficked specifically for sex. So you can do the math on all of that. But the point is, a vast amount of people are being moved. I see it like as a mass of ants often, from country to country. You know, they're just travelling all the time. And the highest percentage are women and children destined for the sex industry. And we're looking at big business. Human trafficking profits something like 31.6 billion euros to traffickers, international mafia, and other criminal organisations. Sexual trafficking is said to profit about 14 billion euros in Europe alone. And today it's the second or third, varies, highest criminal trade in the world, the others being drug and arms trafficking. But it's forecast by the year 2020 that it will be the biggest international criminal trade in the world. So out of 197 nations in the world today, 187 are involved in human trafficking. So I guess that includes all or most of our countries here. And if that, I don't know if you want all these figures, but about half are countries of origin and about half are countries of destination. So, you know, it's not just from there to here, but it's from there to here and here to there and to there. And there are about 98 transit countries. And I have to say to my German friends here that Germany is the largest transit country in Europe, where women are coming from Eastern Europe and also from Asia, and then they're moving out to other countries further in Western Europe, to the United States, to some back to Asia, Russian women in Asia, Russian women in New Zealand. And the majority of these will move through Germany because, of course, it's so easy with all the borders. And it's said that something like 120,000 to 500,000 women and children, well, victims, are forced into sexual slavery every year across Europe. That's moving backwards and forwards. So why Europe? Reasons include an increase in poverty, gender imbalance, organised crime. You know, we see great mobs of Hungarian mafia, I have to tell you, on the street in Berlin, and I guess Rachel does on the streets in Vienna. We also have the Bulgarian mafia, we have the Polish mafia, and probably a few others. I had dinner with some members of the German mafia in Pattaya in Thailand once. with somebody who was actually a trafficker, but we were trying to befriend her, a woman, a Thai woman. And of course, the entry of Eastern and Central nations, European nations, into the European Union has also facilitated easy movement from country to country. And of course, this affects both the trafficker and the trafficked. But one of the major issues is demand, and I'm so glad there's so many men here, because I always say that prostitution is not a women's issue, it's a male issue. Because if there was no demand, well then there would be no supply. And research shows that something like 60% of men in the church use pornography or are involved in other sexual activity. That's a huge number, a huge percentage. But I believe it's true. And so, you know, one of the complexities of women face when they go from one country to the other is language. You know, and for us who try to help them, we have the same problem, because we work on two streets in Berlin, this is Alabaster Jar. We work on one street where it's all German women, and so I'm the only one in our team that doesn't speak German, so we don't really have any problems there. And these are educated German girls, and most of them speak some English. But the other street that we work on, probably 50% would be non-German. And so they're coming from Poland, from Czech Republic, from Slovakia. I think most of these countries are represented here. From Bulgaria and from Hungary. Occasionally some from the Ukraine. We also have some from Brazil and the Dominican Republic. So, you know, there's a great challenge for us out there. And so there are four methods used by traffickers. Abduction, and this happens in country. We recently heard a report from the police in Berlin that young boys were being abducted from good homes in one part of Berlin and being sold into sexual slavery. You know, these are not street kids. These are kids from good homes. And lover boys, some of you may be familiar with the term lover boys, just this phenomenon that is sweeping the Western world of these gorgeous young guys who pick on vulnerable girls and make a split with them and their family and begin to groom them for prostitution. And, you know, they're the perfect boyfriend, and the parents, if the parents are still around, you know, like them. And then she hits 18, and suddenly she's on the street. And it's payback time. What do I owe you anything for? You know, the dinners, the food, the clothes, the flowers, the everything. And so she's trapped. And in our work, we've met many German girls who are victims of lover boys. And they hit the street the day they're 18. We'll say, oh, I haven't seen you before. No, I just started yesterday. It was my birthday. Oh, how old are you? I turned 18. And so we know. And one of the things that we are trying to do as a part of our work is I'm not sure the correct political terms, but to set up a political campaign to change, to raise the age of legal entry into prostitution from 18 to 21 as a means of combating trafficking and also child prostitution, because the younger the legal age of entry, the lower, you know, the younger the age below that, people will be involved in prostitution. And figures for Germany say that something like 41% of all those in prostitution, 400,000 women, are under the age of 18. And also that trafficking has increased over the last year, and 12% of those trafficked into Germany over the last year were under the age of 18. And so we see that if we can do this, so Germans, please take our stuff and get on board, maybe we can change something to help these women and children. And of course, forced marriages is another means of trafficking, as I mentioned before, false job agencies. And so prostitution is harmful. And there was a woman, Melissa Fairley, who did a lot of research in many countries on prostitution. She's a psychologist. And shows that 60 to 70% of women in prostitution are raped, 70 to 90% are physically assaulted, and 68% meet the criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder. And Bibi, who's one of my German friends who says she works on the street by choice, when I asked her how this job was for her, she said, oh, professionally it's good, you know, I make good money. But she said, my soul is in the pits. And when I worked in Thailand, a young woman came into our centre one night with many, many razor cuts up her arms. And I said, why have you cut yourself so much? Because they do cut. It's a way of alleviating the emotional pain. If you cut yourself, the physical pain sort of deadens the other for a while. She said, because I don't know if I'm dead or if I'm alive. And it's only when I cut and see the blood running that I know that I still have life. And this is what prostitution does to people. And people say, well, why don't they leave? Well, you know, it's just not that easy. They may, if they're a victim of human trafficking, they don't know where they are, they can't speak the language, they've lost their papers, maybe their tickets, and they have no way of escape. They have no knowledge of where to go for help. They don't speak the language. They feel very isolated. But more than that, they believe all the lies that are told about them. You know, you'll earn good money, or many, many lies and threats made against their family. You know, if you run away, we'll kill your father or we'll get your child. And sadly, it happens. And so they are, you know, they're trapped. They're really trapped. We recently were able to get a young woman back to Bulgaria. We're still so excited about this because we really abducted her right under the nose of her pimp. She, in Berlin, we work on the streets, just going out, offering friendship, love, help, whatever we can to the women and building up trust and relationship. It's all about relationship. But we also operate a cafe twice a week, one evening and one afternoon. And this girl came into our cafe and she said, I want to leave. I want to leave now. And I was not there, but they phoned me and said, what do we do? So I said, well, get a safe house and get her somewhere off the street now. There was a church down the road. So I said, take her there. And, you know, just tell them your alabaster jar and they'll let you in. And because I knew there was always somebody there in the office. And so they did this. And before they did this, she walked out of the cafe again and then she sort of came back and the pimp came in and it was in and out. And finally she disappeared. And by this time they had a place to take her. And so one of our team had a car, so they saw her back on the street. So she just cruised down with the car, wound down the window, get in, and off they went. And the guy just sort of over here, you know, about 100 yards away, watching it all. And I have been involved in working in Bulgaria, building up a network of people that are interested in becoming involved in this kind of ministry and also to provide like a safe route home. And so we had many contacts and we were able to get her on a plane after a few days and get her back to a safe place. And it was very wonderful because God just orchestrated the whole thing. And as we put her on the plane at the airport, we said, you know, we'd like to pray for you. And she was the first person to pray. And she just said, thank you, God, you know, for doing this for me. And it was just beautiful. And then she told us that she really was a backslidden Christian. But it was wonderful that, you know, she just gave all the glory to God as we did this. And so, you know, why should we be concerned about these women? Because so often people look and they're so judgmental and just think, well, you know, they want to be doing this. The scriptures give two very good reasons, I think. And one is God's heart for the prostitute. And you know, as we read through the Old Testament, many times God uses the story of a prostitute as a demonstration of his love for the nation of Israel. So, I mean, he chooses her to use as a demonstration, not some wealthy woman who, you know, has everything together. And the other is Jesus' attitude and example. I was invited to speak at a big global forum in by the evangelical something or other in the United States a few years ago on trafficking, and we had to address our remarks around what would Jesus do. So when it was my turn, I stood up and I just said John 8, verses 1 to 11. You know, Jesus showed mercy and compassion and forgiveness to the woman taken in adultery, and he pointed the finger at her accusers. And so to work with victims of sexual trafficking and women in prostitution, we need to have a total shift in our own thinking and our own attitudes, you know, and not see these women out there as sinners needing to be saved. Well, of course, we know they are, but, you know, so were we once. But we need to see them as women that God is passionate about and that God loves. And God does not judge, but he wants to set them free. And if we want to do something about stopping this whole issue, we have to not look at prostitution as a moral issue, but we have to be prepared to look at the whole spectrum, the traffickers, the pimps, the hotel owners, the clients, the exploiters, the advertisers, the service providers, and of course the clients, everybody who buys into this industry. And so, you know, I often say, well, as I said before, that this is an issue for men, because men can talk to other men. And I sadly, I only have German left, which is good, all the English have gone. I have this thing that was written by a colleague, a police colleague of mine in Thailand, an Australian, and it's just called a code of conduct for men. But it's, you know, just written. This man was not a Christian, but a good-living guy who respected women and just commitments. I will not do this. I will talk about, you know, to other people about not doing this, like prostitution, abuse, putting women down, and so on. And so we also need to attack pornography, because pornography is the driving factor behind demand for the majority of men who use prostitution. And so what can we do? You know, we hear the words human trafficking, we think it's not to do with us. It's so huge, it's the responsibility of the United Nations or the international police or whatever else. It's too big for us. But when we hear of real people, we can help real people. And, you know, I just feel really proud that we could help the one woman get back to Bulgaria. Okay, there's about 100 other Bulgarian women on the street, but it's really a one by one by one. And I don't know how much time I have. I don't think I have much. But, you know, look beyond the surface. If you go to have your nails done by the Vietnamese, you know, just look underneath. Maybe look at the hours she has to work. Maybe ask her, you know, about her living conditions. Maybe she's a victim of human trafficking, not sexually necessarily, but labour. What about the waiter in the local Indian restaurant, who probably is not being abused, but he's being abused emotionally, maybe, and verbally, maybe, and financially, maybe, and his living conditions may be much, very substandard to what you or I would be forced to live in. And, you know, God knows their names. We see all these people, we hear the, read the stuff in the newspapers. But God knows their names. He knows Zoe. He knows Alicia. He knows Kitty. He knows Erica. He knows Maria. He knows Mary from Ghana, who works on the streets in Lyon. He knows Alicia, who was trafficked from Uzbekistan to Bangkok, and so on and so on. And so everyone has the right, every human being has the right, as we heard this morning, to live a life with dignity, honour and respect. And so what can me and my church do? You know, we can do many things, and we've put some prayer bulletins on your seats. These are put out by the Salvation Army Initiative Against Sexual Trafficking. There's information, there's details, there's points for prayer. You can join our campaign if you're from Germany. I have materials out there. We can pray, but sometimes we think, well, you know, I mean, we know that prayer is effective, but sometimes it seems we need to do more than pray. We can get out there in the schools and in our youth groups and in our churches, Sunday schools, talk about these issues, prevention, promotion and advocacy, looking to lobby for political change, which is what we're trying to do. There are needs for people who are counsellors, trained in counselling, to be available to counsel and help these people. They're damaged, they're torn to pieces, and they need professionals to put them together. People say, oh, bring you to Jesus, and that's the answer. Sorry, no way. It's a beginning. It's a first step. I have a lovely, beautiful friend in Germany. I met her at somebody's house a few years ago, and I was recently in a church in a place called Oberhausen, and she came because she lived not far from there and helped me with a workshop that I did. And she was tricked into prostitution when she was 18. She had no parents. She'd come out of an orphanage, met this guy in a disco, lover boy, so on. She was forced all over Germany to France. She was in the windows in Amsterdam. She was in Italy. 15 years before she could escape from this man. Totally addicted to alcohol and to drugs. Somebody took her to a place called Lüdenscheid, which is a Christian drug rehab place in Germany. And, of course, she met Jesus. And her life changed, and she became a radiant Christian. But she has been out of prostitution now for 12 years, and she has just got her first job. You think, well, this is crazy. But she was just so destroyed that even though she loved Jesus, she was in church, she was, you know, had much healing prayer, she's been in and out of therapy for all of those years, diagnosed as having a personality disorder, you know, disassociation, because women disassociate from what's happening to them, and post-traumatic stress disorder. And it's taken all those years, and she's nearly there. You can get involved with ministries that are working on the streets in your city. It's not easy in Europe. It was easy in Thailand. You know, we had hundreds of women that came out of prostitution and came to Christ. We saw one or two of their pictures here. But it's a different story in Europe. But our objective, and all these people that are in these ministries, and they're growing, is to bring hope to women. Hope, the hope of Christ, that there can be change. And I want to talk about networks, but I want to first of all just tell you a little story. I was on a Youth with a Mission base in Atlanta a few years ago, and I gave a presentation, and then it was the intercession time, so, you know, we all divided into little groups. And there was a young Filipino guy in my group, and he began to have a vision, and he saw this ship coming from China with women, and this took 2 hours, I take it about 1 minute, across the sea, and they came with women and children in the hold, and they came to Ecuador. They were offloaded onto a small boat packed around with bags of potatoes, and then they were taken up through the Panama into Mississippi. I didn't know you could do that, but you can. And then they were offloaded into trucks still packed with the potatoes and destined, sent into for the sex industry in New York. Now, I believe this was true, what he was saying. He knew nothing about this. And I have a friend who worked in the State Department in the trafficking department, Laura Lederer. And so I emailed her and I said, Laura, I have this information. I wonder if you could check it out. I can't tell you where I got it from on an email, but I believe it's a reputable source. And I prayed for this for a while, and then I went back to Germany. And then somebody sent me a newspaper cutting, 3 trucks apprehended, coming into New York with Chinese women and children packed in with bags of potatoes destined for the sex industry. And so you can make a difference. And we can make a difference if we work toward it. Now, we have Jennifer Roomhild tonight, you might like to stand up, is the World Evangelism Evangelical Alliance, European Evangelical Alliance representative on trafficking issues. And we also, there are many other networks, there's Not For Sale, there's many other things, IJM, International Justice Mission. And so we want to have people that are, if you're representing, if you're from some organisation working with women or children in prostitution, or some organisation that's combating human trafficking, please see Jennifer, because she's got some sheets, and we want you to just put the information of your organisation. And those of you who are interested in being involved in some kind of group, she has another sheet for you. So please, before you leave, could you do that? And she has some flyers to give you as well. Thank you so much. God bless you.
Thank you very much, Patricia. That was really very helpful. And when I've heard Patricia before, there were always people in the audience, which I found hard to understand, but they had never really grasped that we have slavery in Europe, particularly some of the women, the Christian women from Eastern Europe. And they were so pleased to hear from Patricia, because they could go back to their countries like Romania and Bulgaria and get their churches involved in helping these girls that would come back. Because when they go back to their country of origin, it's very difficult for them to get back in their own families or their own villages. They really need the church to help them. So this is a wonderful opportunity for all of us to be involved. We have time for one question for Patricia. Is there anybody with an absolutely burning question?
Must have told you everything.
Oh. The question is, when these girls go back, how well informed are these traffickers about the family, and is there danger when they go back home?
Many of them come from the same village or the same town, and so they know the house, they know the parents, they know the family, and for some it can be very dangerous. They really can't go home. But some will not leave because of that threat, you know, because they're afraid that they may not necessarily go home, but they're no longer bringing in money for this man, and so there will be some retribution.
And that, I think, is a really a wonderful opportunity for the churches in Eastern Europe to provide safe places for these girls that go back. I said one question, but I saw you had a question too. People that are begging, is that part of the network or is that separate?
It can well be part of human trafficking. Mm-hmm. People are trafficked and then forced to beg.
Beggars. Mm-hmm. Well, again, thank you very much, Patricia. Thank you all very much for coming. May God bless you.